This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Sport of Pro Wrestling podcast. I am Chris Samsa, and this is your G1 Climax 30 Night 3 preview. G1 Climax 30 continues from Sapporo on September 23rd with another event stacked with A-block matches. The card is split with two matches between wrestlers that seek to remain undefeated and two matches between wrestlers who seek their first win of the tournament. The main event will feature the end of another G1 to Wrestle Kingdom and Back to G1 trilogy involving Kota Ibushi, as he will battle Jay White in a rematch of last year's tournament final. The undercard of tournament matches features some remarkably captivating matchups, including two intra-stable matches that we've never seen in a New Japan ring. The semi-main event will feature Chaos members Will Ospreay and Tomohiro Ishii facing off for the first time in their careers. And third from the top, Suzuki-gun member Taichi will battle leader Minoru Suzuki for the first time in NJPW. Earlier on the card, Kazuchika Okada will attempt to continue his 2020 dominance against easy target Yujiro Takahashi, and Jeff Cobb and Shingo Takagi will both look to get their first points on the board in the first tournament match of the night. Of course, you can find my complete statistical preview for every competitor in this year's G1 at voicesofwrestling.com. I have interactive, sortable tables for NJPW's 2020, as well as all 1,470 G1 Climax matches to date at sportofprowrestling.com, and you can let me know what you find when you drill down by dropping me a line on Twitter at TheChrisSamsa. So let's get into it. This Wednesday's event will come to us from Sapporo at 6:30 p.m. JST. That is 4:30 a.m. Central Time, so that's Chicago time. So what is that, 5:30 in New York and 2:30 a.m. on the West Coast. So you can watch live or on demand at njpwworld.com. And while we're talking about NJPW World, again, I'm going to give a shout-out to NJPWEXT. So NJPWEXT is the only browser extension for NJPWWorld.com with features like synchronized viewing parties, dark mode, improved translations and layouts, custom and shared playlists, and much, much more. It takes NJPW World to the next level. Visit NJPWEXT.us today for details. So now that the tournament is underway, we have some results to talk about here in this little segment of the show. Results are real simple right now. We're just going to go through the, you know, a little bit of the points totals, the standings, and we'll talk a little bit about who beat who so we can keep track of some tiebreakers as well. And as things get more interesting in some of the more detailed stats like match length statistics and pin attempts and things like that, we'll start to slice those out here too. So, but for right now, pretty simple. Everyone's had one match, so they've either got one win or one loss. So the winners, Kota Ibushi, Will Ospreay, Minoru Suzuki, Taichi, and Jay White. The losers, Jeff Cobb, Kazuchika Okada, Tomohiro Ishii, Shingo Takagi, and Yujiro Takahashi. So Ibushi defeated Kazuchika Okada in the main event of Night 1. Will Ospreay defeated Yujiro Takahashi in the first match of Night 1. Minoru Suzuki defeated Tomohiro Ishii. Taichi defeated Jeff Cobb. And Jay White defeated Shingo Takagi. So as the tournament goes on, those tiebreakers and what's important will become more and more evident. But of course, I've got the tiebreaker table up at sportofprowrestling.com. I also include it with all of my previews at voicesofwrestling.com too. As I said in the intro, we've got a five block match card here with one Young Lion match opening things up. So really, the main event is pretty clear with this match. It's Kota Ibushi versus Jay White as they finish up their kind of trilogy, their 2019-2020 trilogy that bounced from the G1 finals in 2019 and then to a Wrestle Kingdom kind of consolation match in the Double Gold Dash, and now back to the beginning of G1 Climax 30. So Kota Ibushi and Jay White had only shared the ring once before their G1 final matchup last year. That was on July 25th of 2015, where they were an unsuccessful tag team partners against the Bullet Club team of AJ Styles and Bad Luck Fale. At the time, Kota Ibushi was still splitting his time between DDT and New Japan, and Jay White was still an eager young lion with mohawked hair and his simple black trunks sprinting to the ring ahead of Ibushi during their entrances. They were unsuccessful as a team, and then they kept away from each other for 4+ years until last year's hyper-competitive G1 Climax final, which saw Ibushi overcome the Bullet Club antics that brought Jay White to the tournament final. Ibushi looks to begin his tournament this year the same way he ended his G1 last year, with back-to-back victories against now former IWGP heavyweight champions Kazuchika Okada and Jay White, avenging his losses to both at Wrestle Kingdom. Jay White, on the other hand, will look to leverage his most recent one-on-one matchup with Ibushi, their Wrestle Kingdom Double Gold Dash consolation match on January 5th that White was able to win definitively. White's victory over Ibushi may have served as a turning point in his ability to produce results. He hasn't lost a singles match since that victory, and even with a long layoff, he returned to Japan with a statement victory over Shingo Takagi to begin this year's G1. So both these guys are coming into this match, and it kind of feels like they've both figured something out in their first matches of the G1. Ibushi really like definitively defeated Kazuchika Okada in just 21 minutes, and Jay White defeated Shingo Takagi in a match that never really even seemed to be in question. So I mean, Takagi put up a good fight, but White definitely had that match in his back pocket. 19 minutes and 28 seconds, real solid victory. Jay White looks great, super in shape, came out clearly excited to be back in the way that only he can show, arrogant and just, you know, dastardly. But he got the job done. So these guys have sort of different but similar G1 histories. Both have had quite a bit of success. Ibushi's in his 6th G1, Jay White's in his 3rd, but Kota Ibushi enters this match with an 8-match unbeaten streak in G1 block matches dating back to last year, 9 straight G1 wins if you include last year's final win over Jay White. Now, Jay White enters this match with a 7-match winning streak in G1 block matches. Of course, his overall G1 winning streak stands at 1, his victory over Shingo Takagi on Saturday night, as his impressive winning streak to win the B-Block last year was halted by Ibushi in last year's final. Coming into this year's tournament, Jay White had 12 wins over his first 2 G1 tournaments. Only AJ Styles, with 14, had more victories in their first 2 G1 climaxes. So both these guys, they're producing results in the G1. Jay White has to be considered one of the favorites after going to the final last year and probably being pretty heated and ready to go as he comes into this year's G1. Ibushi, after winning against Okada, you kind of have to consider him as someone who could certainly win the block, but it would be quite the feat to go to 3 finals in a row. No one's ever done that, and that would be the case with Ibushi if he were to go to the final this year. In regards to 2020, we've got Jay White at 4-1 and Kota Ibushi at 2-3 in singles matches over the course of 2020. Over the last 365 days, the last calendar year, Jay White at 6-1, Ibushi at 4-3. So Jay White enters this match on a 4-match winning streak. The Switchblade hasn't lost a singles match since dropping the Intercontinental Championship to Tetsuya Naito on January 4th. Since then, he's defeated Ibushi, Sonata, Flip Gordon, and Shingo Takagi. Ibushi's had kind of a tough go of it. He ended 2019 on an 11-match winning streak, but really those last 365 days have not been so kind to him. He went 0-2 to begin the year, and he's only picked up two singles victories this year those being his first round match against Zack Sabre Jr. that he won, and his match the other night against Kazuchika Okada. Now, it may come as a surprise because these guys, neither of them has ever had a draw in the G1, and it's been quite a while since I think either of them has had a time limit draw in any circumstance, but this matchup is definitely a statistical candidate for that time limit draw. It took Ibushi 31-01 to defeat Jay White in last year's G1 final, so that is obviously 1 minute and 1 second over the typical G1 30-minute time limit. And then these guys have two of the three longest average losing match lengths in New Japan in 2020. So White's stands at 33:54, and Ibushi's stands at 27:27, and that's second and third in the stamina metric behind just Tetsuya Naito's 38:01. So these guys, they lose long, they wear down their opponents if they need to, and they stay in matches. So it would surprise me if they went to a draw in kind of a G1-style match, but it's certainly a possibility that I don't think we should ignore. So that's your main event, Jay White, Kota Ibushi in a G1 Climax Finals rematch, bouncing it right back, and we'll see who takes the rubber match of that one. So I'm excited to see those two match up just one more time. Before that, in the semi-main event, we've got Tomohiro Ishii and Will Ospreay. Ishii entering the match with 0 points. Will Ospreay entering the match with 2 points. So Tomohiro Ishii looks to score his first 2 points of the G1 in a first-time matchup against fellow Chaos member Will Ospreay. Ospreay and Ishii succeed with very different styles, and it will be interesting to see how Will Ospreay's high-impact acrobatics and agility match up with Ishii's no-nonsense striking style. Will Ospreay was given a layup by the New Japan matchmakers in his first match back since the pandemic hiatus, defeating Yujiro Takahashi in just 7 minutes and 34 seconds. Ospreay looked ready to compete at a high level in the ring, and upon his victory, he was given a microphone to declare that, quote, "New Japan has been good in the pandemic era, but it's so much better now that I'm back, and the G1 is about being the one, and you're looking at him." Ospreay is, he's never really outwardly lacked confidence, but this was one of his first opportunities to declare it so publicly as he scored his first win of the tournament. Tomohiro Ishii wasn't so lucky. His first tournament match this year was against Minoru Suzuki, the 52-year-old veteran and now never openweight champion, who was snubbed in the selection process in last year's G1, so he came in with a chip on his shoulder for sure. Ishii battled Suzuki as hard as he could, but ultimately succumbed to the gotch-style pile driver in defeat. Ishii comes into this match with quite a bit more experience in the G1 than Will Ospreay. This is his 8th consecutive G1 climax. Ishii hasn't been super successful in the G1. He's 30-35 overall with a .462 winning percentage. Average match length lands at 14:17. So that's pretty much straight up with the average of the last 10 years. So, and then you've got Will Ospreay. This is his second tournament. He's got 10 G1 matches under his belt, and he's 5-5. Ospreay's all-time average G1 match length of 17:13, though, is currently tied for the longest among this year's G1 competitors with Okada. His average match length did drop quite a bit with that 7-minute victory over Yujiro Takahashi. When it comes to that first match of the tournament this year, Ishii was the only wrestler who did not even attempt a pin in his first G1 match of 2020. Ospreay, on the other hand, he attempted 2 pinfalls, one of which was successful. So that's a 50% conversion rate for Ospreay on the pin attempts. Last year's tournament, Ospreay had the most pinning attempts at 51 over the course of his 9 matches, so that was an average of 5.66 per match. And then his first match this year, only 2. And then on the other end of the spectrum, Ishii in last year's tournament, his opponents attempted to pin him 49 times. So that's an average of 5.44. And Minoru Suzuki only attempted to pin Ishii once, and he was successful. So that is something to look out for, too. Ospreay's style is usually, especially against bigger guys that he's mismatched with, we'll say, he typically just...
In the hobby, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up thinking, maybe I can pull a Ken Griffey Jr. rookie card, but with zero transparency on available cards and hit rates, it's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com, the only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each one. Now, when I buy Slab Packs at Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. I was able to open an Arena Club Slab Pack, and I'll be honest, it was a lot better than what you normally do. Say you go to a card show, and there's a random innocuous brown bag of cards, and yeah, you can open it and look, it's going to be junk. You know what I mean? Like, you know what you're probably going to get in those. Maybe you find that fun, and sometimes I do. Sometimes I like just opening up cards and saying, hey, look at some random cards or whatever. But if you're really in this game to find value and find particular cards, it sucks to have to buy these mystery packs, and it ends up being, you know, almost nothing, you know, nothing of value. Not with Arena Club. You can display, again, of all available cards, hit rates, grading. So you know that when you're opening up the slab pack, you are going to get something valuable. You are getting something good. And Arena Club, in addition to having those great slab packs we just talked about, is also a marketplace for card collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying, all that sort of stuff. But those Arena Club slab packs, man, they are revolutionizing the repack game with transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed in your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. So again, sending these things off, it's going to be officially graded by Arena Club. And the Arena Club grading process is accurate, fast, and transparent, with full grade rationale provided and explanation of how your card was scored. So whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. So right now, I've got a special offer here for Voices of Wrestling Network listeners. You can get 10% off of your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Now, that's a crazy offer. That's 10% off a $400 slab pack. $40 off right there. 10% off your first purchase. No matter what that purchase is, 10% off. Again, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet, arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase on Arena Club. And we thank them for sponsoring the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio. And then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They are on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived, and really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket, or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it, 0.3 second fingerprint recognition, 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
Keeps attempting to win, which it's a sound strategy. So trying to pins are what gets you victories in pro wrestling. And last year during the G1, he was kind of, that was his role. He was kind of the underdog in the tournament. So he was just constantly going for pins and flash pins and pins that weren't off of finishers too. So in 2020, you got Will Ospreay kind of having a tough year, losing a couple of matches early to Hiromu Takahashi and Ryu Lee, and then only just picking up the win over Yujiro, so he's 1-2 on the year. Ishii is 3-3. Not a ton of big wins for Ishii, but, you know, 3-3 nonetheless. The interesting bit here, though, is that Will Ospreay's last two losses, so those losses to Hiromu Takahashi and Ryu Lee, those are his only two losses over the course of the last 365 days, and those matches have averaged 25 minutes and 48 seconds. Tomohiro Ishii only has one singles victory on record in his career longer than that 25 minutes and 48 seconds, and that was his 29 minute and 45 second victory over Kenny Omega in the first round of the 2017 New Japan Cup. So that is something to look out for. Ospreay, again, he goes long whether he wins or loses. Ishii, not very successful in those longer matches over the course of his entire career. Head-to-head, like I said earlier, these guys have never faced each other. It'll be their first singles matchup. The kind of fascinating thing is that they've also never been on the opposite side of a tag or a multi-person match. So these guys have shared the ring 56 times, but only ever on the same team. So the intra-squad game here, the intra-stable game between Ishii and Ospreay, I think this is the test to see if Ospreay, the heavyweight, can hang. And I think Ishii's the guy to play gatekeeper there if it's not going to be the case for Will just yet. Third match on the card, we've got another intra-stable match. We've got Minoru Suzuki and Taichi, both of Suzuki-gun. Minoru Suzuki entering with 2 points. Taichi also entering with 2 points after a victory over Jeff Cobb. Minoru Suzuki returned to the G1 climax in a way that only he can, declaring that he's certainly not here on a retirement tour in a hard-hitting, no-nonsense victory over Tomohiro Ishii. On paper, Suzuki's next matchup with Taichi may be a little bit easier to stomach, but the intra-faction nature of Suzuki-gun versus Suzuki-gun is an unknown commodity, as these two have only faced off once back in 2016 before Taichi had even really graduated to heavyweight. Taichi entered his second G1 with a hard-fought victory over Jeff Cobb, and he will certainly be battling with pride as he enters his hometown of Sapporo as a reigning IWGP Tag Team Champion. In regards to G1 climax history, Suzuki comes in at 36-30-2 with a 529 win percentage. Taichi, 5-5, so this is his second tournament, so he's got one tournament plus one match, 5-5 at a straight up 500. So not a ton to go with there. Minoru Suzuki, not a ton of big time success in the G1, but over 500, so that's meaningful. In 2020, Suzuki is 3-2, that 600 win percentage, and so is Taichi. So both these guys, 3-2, pretty good. They're doing okay. Suzuki's lost a couple of matches He lost his New Japan Cup match against Yuji Nagata, and he lost the U.S. title match against Jon Moxley. So Suzuki, as I shared in one of my previews, Suzuki's kind of saving his matchups and his singles matches for higher stakes matches this year. So going to be interesting to see Suzuki sustain the pace at the during the G1 and see if he falls off late. In regards to head-to-head, the Super J-Cast posted a note on their Twitter that there have only been two occasions out of the 14 matches where a faction leader has lost to their subordinate during the G1. Both of those were Okada, once in 2018 when Jay White defeated him, and once in 2016 when Ishii defeated him. So that doesn't bode well for Taichi, as Suzuki is the leader of Suzuki-gun. Suzuki and Taichi have only faced each other once, and that was at a, what was it called? The Taichi and Taka produced third anniversary convention at Shinkiba First Ring. Not a New Japan match, but Suzuki did defeat Taichi in 23 minutes and 45 seconds. Similarly to Osprey and Ishii, Suzuki and Taichi have never faced each other in a tag team or multi-person match. But these two have tagged together a whopping 367 times, which seems outrageous. But these guys, they've been running in the same circle for quite a while here. So it'll be good to see them butt heads. I don't think they're going to go easy on each other. I think that there may be something that comes out of this, because there's always been, Taichi seems to have a desire to kind of grow his capacity, if you will, in the name of being a faction leader. The third match on the card, it's going to be Kazuchika Okada and Yujiro Takahashi battling again in 2020 for, I think, the third official time that really counts for both of them. So both of these guys entering with 0 points. Kind of a surprise to see Okada coming in with zero, but you know, you can't win them all, I guess. And Yujiro, not a surprise at all that he's coming in at zero. But these guys have been going after each other for quite a while. And, of course, they meet up again in the G1. They're continuing their seemingly never-ending feud as they both attempt to score their first win of this young G1. Yujiro struggled to keep up with the returning Will Ospreay in his first G1 match in over 5 years. He lost quickly to the Assassin in just 7 minutes and 34 seconds. Okada drew the short straw for his first match of this year's tournament, pitting him against defending G1 Climax winner Kota Ibushi. Okada, still committed to his Cobra Clutch, failed to meet the energy of the explosive Ibushi, losing to the Golden Star in Okada low 21-35. The Rainmaker will look to get back on track against Yujiro Takahashi, a competitor he's never fallen to. When it comes to G1 Climax history, Okada's one of the best, 50-21-4, with a winning percentage of 667. Total match length in the G1, 21 hours, 30 minutes, and 48 seconds. So he certainly can get back on track. We know Okada will have success in the G1 one way or another. Yujiro, on the other hand, one of the worst. Surprised to see him in the tournament, but yeah, I guess every now and then you got to give someone another shot. 19-34. Like I said, this is his first tournament since 2015. So we've got an inexperienced and also unsuccessful, typically, Yujiro Takahashi facing off with Okada here. So Okada and Yujiro's 292-point difference in their G1 winning percentage represents the widest gap between all A-block competitors. So you've got the best in Okada and the worst in Yujiro. Dating back to last year's A-Block final, though, with Kota Ibushi, Kazuchika Okada has lost 2 straight G1 Climax matches. With normal competitors, that wouldn't be cause to panic, but with Okada, it may be. Okada has only lost 3 straight G1 matches once, and that was between the end of the 2017 tournament and the beginning of the 2018 tournament. And 2018 tournament was not a great tournament for Okada, as he seemed to kind of lose his mind throughout it. So we may be seeing a different version of that happening with Okada here, as he remains committed to the money clip. So his submission move, the Cobra Clutch that he's branded as the money clip. So he showed on Saturday night that he's remaining committed to that finishing submission hold. But he's in his, 75 G1 matches. He only has one previous G1 victory via submission, which is that 2017 victory over Toriano. So something to look out for, whether or not he's able to cross that bridge and get some G1 wins with this submission that he's been committed to since the pandemic hiatus. In 2020, Okada, still one of the best, even though it may seem like he's struggling. He's been a little less dominant, but he's been 8-4, which is in line with his, it's actually the same as his all-time G1 win percentage of 667. His 8 singles victories remain the most in New Japan, with Evil and Jeff Cobb hot on his heels at 7. Okada's 5 singles victories by submission are tied for most in New Japan with Yuji Nagata and Taiji Ishimori. Like I said, these guys have some head-to-head history. Some of it back in 14 and 15, both in G1, that was Okada victories. And then again at Sengoku Lord just earlier this year, Okada defeated Yujiro in 13 minutes and 43 seconds in a singles match. Of course, not noted in their one-on-one series is Okada's victory over Yujiro in that 3-on-1 handicap match earlier this year at Korakuen Hall to qualify for the KOPW 2020 four-way. So these guys meet up again, hopefully for the last time in a little while, as this hasn't been the most captivating of feuds, especially by Kazuchika Okada standards. But they got to face each other one more time here in the G1, and we'll see kind of where it ends up. Maybe Yujiro's figured something out. And to kick off the tournament matches on the card, we'll have another match between competitors who lost their first match in this year's G1. Jeff Cobb will face off against Shingo Takagi in a match that's sure to be inspired by Minoru Suzuki and Tomohiro Ishii's hard-hitting battle from Night 1. These guys, again, don't have a ton of history. They're both in their second G1 climax. They're both 4-6 in G1s, which is a little bit surprising to see Shingo and Cobb with the same record. Shingo's matches have gone significantly longer. He's averaging 16 minutes and 41 seconds, while Cobb averages just 12:23. Each at 4-6, this is the only match on tonight's card with two wrestlers with all-time G1 records under 500. Cobb, Shingo, and Taichi are three wrestlers to keep an eye on, if not for this year, but for future years, as they are all in their second tournament, and they have shared a block each year. So they'll have the same, so those guys will have the same group of competitors that they've faced, so their G1 records over the course of 2 years will kind of share relevance. So, in regards to 2020, Cobb has 7 singles wins, so he's 7-3. His 7 singles victories are second most in New Japan this year, behind only Kazuchika Okada with 8. He's still looking for his first 2020 victory outside of the U.S., though. Shingo Takagi, just 4-3, still riding high off that NEVER Openweight Championship title reign, but probably also has a little chip on his shoulder after losing that title to Minoru Suzuki. These guys' head-to-head history is pretty simple on the surface. It'll be Cobb and Takagi's second one-on-one singles match and second G1 climax match. Like I said, they were in the same block last year. So Cobb defeated Shingo in 12:27 during last year's tournament. So though last year's G1 was their first technical one-on-one match, Jeff Cobb and Shingo Takagi came into last year's tournament familiar with each other after Cobb defeated Shingo and Bandido in a three-way elimination match in the finals of the 2018 PWG Battle of Los Angeles, in a match that defined Jeff Cobb's trajectory as a force to be reckoned with. So, on the surface, these guys are a match to watch. We're certainly going to see the highest effort from both of them as they both try to get out of that zero and get some points on the board. So those are our 5 G1 matches. We've also got a Young Lions match to kick off the card. That'll be Yuya Uemura and Gabriel Kidd on this night. I have had some requests to follow and track the unofficial C block, especially because it's just these three young lions. I will absolutely do that. I'm going to give them each a couple of matches to build up a record, and then I will start reporting that out as I see fit. So that's all I've got for you today. We've previewed all five of the G1 Climax A block matches on the September 23rd card. I will be back tomorrow to preview Thursday the 24th's B block card. Of course, you can find this preview in written form at sportofprowrestling.com or voicesofwrestling.com. Give me a follow on Twitter at TheChrisSamsa to interact with me during most major pro wrestling events. I appreciate you giving me a listen, and I'll see you next time on the Sport of Pro Wrestling podcast.